From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this next conversation could be made as soon as January 2016. That's when the Lago Resort and Casino could open in the town of Tyre. The green light given by the state yesterday, one of four projects to get that approval after a long process of review and a lot of competitors out there. And that, again, means that gamblers could start playing games at that new Seneca County project as soon as January 2016, if everything stays on schedule. I want to bring in James Wilmot, who's a principal officer on the project for Rochester developer Wilmorite. And again, James, I know for you yesterday had to be a day of celebration. What was going through your mind yesterday when the word came?
Just relief and excitement, Evan. You know, the last thing we want to do yesterday is having to call all the people that have been so involved in this in the community and tell them we didn't get it. You know, we have a lot of people that are very invested in the local community between business owners, members of the wine and cheese trails, beer trails. They all called and were excited. And I'm happy I got to give them the good news yesterday instead of bad. So yeah, we're thrilled, and it was just a great moment and a great day.
I know that you're well aware that you've got vociferous supporters and there's also been opposition. So what is the message that you want to send to those who've opposed the project now that it's going forward? What would you want them to hear from you?
We're going to continue to work with everybody in the area. And, you know, everybody that has a legitimate issue, a legitimate problem, we're going to work with them to get through it. You know, we've been very open. We went through about 9 months of public meetings and hearings to get through the approval process locally, and we've changed our project on multiple times now to fit the needs of the local community better. So, you know, we're going to continue to work with them. We're excited to bring such a property to the area, and we hope as they see it going up, you know, it changes their mind.
We're talking to James Wilmot about the new casino project that is coming to Seneca County. Let's talk a little bit about the process, James. First thing that will be finished is the casino, and the hotel comes later. Tell me about that process.
Sure. You know, we're going to be building both at the same time, but it's just the structure of the casino. It's a two-story building. You know, it's more of a typical box. Well, your casino is going to be six stories. You know, it's a little bit more in detail with the finishes, so it takes a little bit longer. So we're really looking at 12 to 14 months, 14 being, you know, if Mother Nature gets a hold of this, for the casino to be open once we break ground, and a couple months lagging behind, probably 4 to 5, for the hotel to open in its full entirety.
What kind of dimensions, are we talking about for the hotel?
Sure, you got a 207-room hotel. It's six stories. You're going to have a couple base suites, and it's going to have a nice 10,000-square-foot spa in it. That's going to have, you know, everything from the tubs to the massage rooms to all the amenities that you'd expect at a premier spa. So that's really what the hotel tower will encompass.
And tell us again for our listeners who they understand the general area, but most of us have not been directly to the site. If you're driving to that site in the town of Tyre, where the Lago project's going to be, tell us again where exactly it is.
Sure. A lot of people would know the Petro stop. So you're in Seneca County. It's exit 41 of the New York State Thruway. When you get off that stop to your north, there's a little bridge. And if you get over the bridge and look to the east towards Syracuse, there is 1,600 feet of frontage right on the New York State Thruway. And that's where we are. We're directly across from the bridge from the Petro, which is the big truck stop there that most people know if they know anything in the area.
And now that you have state approval here, the process, you expect in the next few weeks to get, what is it technically, an official permit?
I'd be issued a casino license.
Okay, a casino license. And that means construction starts almost immediately once that license comes in, right?
Yeah, we've committed to within a week breaking ground. So we're sticking to that date. We pulled some permits this morning. We have all our approvals in place, just building permits that we were getting this morning, and we're ready. I mean, the contractors are calling us about every 2 hours asking if they can start moving dirt. So we're very ready, and you know, we've already bidded out about $90 million of this project with hard bids. So we're ready to get all this underway and, you know, get a structure up as fast as we can.
James, I imagine that it would be more ideal to start in the warm weather months, but is it more difficult if you start in January? Are you more likely to be delayed by a lot of snow or extremely cold weather that makes it hard to get into the earth?
It's possible. It is possible. We've been lucky so far with the weather. We haven't had any really bad freezes, so we can still move dirt right now. But there is a possibility that something like that could happen, and it just makes the project a little more difficult but still doable. So, you know, that's when you might shave off a month or two, or add a month or two to the construction timeline, but it won't be, you know, devastating or adding more than a few months. So, yeah, Mother Nature, especially in this town, can always hold you up a little bit, but we're going to push through, and if we got to spend a little extra money to heat stuff so we can get out there, we're going to do it. I mean, this is our baby right now. We got to see this through.
So again, January 2016 is the best case scenario. Worst case is the opening of the casino by what, maybe spring of 2016?
Yeah, I'd say that probably would be a worst case. You know, it all depends on when we do get this license. They said it would be in short period of time. Could be 3 weeks. It could be 2 months. It really all hinges on when we get the nod from this or the license from the state to move forward.
James, you've been talking about 1,000 permanent jobs, and some of the questions we've heard from our listeners are about what kind of jobs we're talking about. Are they the breakdown of kind of full-time jobs? Are they decent-paying jobs, jobs with benefits? What kind of jobs are we talking about?
Yeah, these will be good-paying jobs with benefits. We are already signed down with an agreement with the Hotel Trades Council, so these will be union jobs, and they're going to be arguing for a very strong rate for their employment, because that's what these unions do. So yeah, one thing that's actually really unique to casinos that a lot of people don't understand is only about 5% of our labor force needs previous training. We're going to actually pay for the training. That they make it past the sort of the first phase of training, we're going to start paying them while we're paying for the training, so that they're going to be actually on staff well before we're open. So it's really unique to casinos that you don't need a 5-page resume that has every school and job in the world. As long as you're a competent, you know, hospitality industry focused person, there's a great opportunity here. And it's most likely, if you're in the hospitality industry, you're not getting the types of tips and the types of pay rates you're going to be getting at a casino. So this is definitely an opportunity that for employment that is good paying jobs with benefits that, because of the amount of employment you're going to need, you're going to see a lot of pull out of Rochester, Syracuse, Binghamton, as well as the Finger Lakes. So we're really excited to put together that labor force.
Talking to James Wilmot for a few more minutes here on a busy day for him and his family, the team out at Lago. I know it has been busy. He's one of the principal officers on the project for Rochester developer Wilmorite as they succeed and get ready to go forward with the casino and resort project. Just off of Thruway Exit 41 near Waterloo, the town is Tyre. When you look at the competition, James, again, I know you and your family know well the importance of making sure you understand your market. And you're still not going to be that far away, maybe 7 exits down the Thruway to Turning Stone. Plenty of Rochesterians go west to Seneca Niagara if they want to play table games. You've got gaming available in Canandaigua. Obviously, you're not going forward if you haven't sized up the market well, but are you concerned that eventually we'll see a saturation of gaming that could dilute your customer base?
Unless something else opens in the area, we don't really see it that way. We've done the studies, and we're basically showing that we're going to create about $130 million of new gaming revenue on an annual basis. So we believe this is a well-underserved market. You know, if you look at other regional markets, you usually see that 60 to 70 miles between full gaming casinos, full class 3, you know, table and slot machine casinos, when there's populations that are in the millions, not hundreds of thousands, which is what we have here in Western New York. So no, I'm not really worried about saturation in our area. And, you know, the only way we're going to get customers and players is if we give them a great experience. So it's competition at its best. You know, if we give somebody a bad experience, they're going to go back to Seneca, they're going to go back to Turning Stone. If we give them a better experience, they're going to stay with us. So this is really a big win for the consumer and the player in these markets. So no, we're not too worried about the saturation, Evan.
I think it was maybe 10, 12 years ago now, I'm going back to when Seneca Niagara opened, and around that time we heard from the people behind Seneca Niagara that you're going to see Seneca Falls, USA change, be revitalized, etc. It has not happened. And are you careful not to overpromise on what happens in Tyre or the area around it? Or do you think that your project, for whatever reason, is going to be different than the history of casinos, which have not brought a lot of development to the surrounding areas?
Sure. You know, it's It's tough to compare an Indian casino with a commercial Class 3 gaming casino. You know, there is different regulations in place. There are different commitments to distribution of wealth as far as the tax basis that we are obviously a part of, that the tribes are not. And there's also efforts that we are going to make that are currently not being done in New York State. You know, the Lago Rewards Program is a great, great idea here. And basically what we're going to allow is that when you play, obviously, a table or a machine, you if you have a card, you accumulate points. And those points for the traditional casino model can only be spent at the hotel, the restaurants, or for other games. We're actually pushing it out in the market. We have agreements with the wine trails, with the beer trails, with the cheese trails, with local restaurants, local retailers, that these millions of dollars in points that people will be generating every year, they can actually use in those establishments outside of our facility. So we're actually trying to push people into this beautiful area and get them to spend that money, as well as their own money, into the local market. So we're hoping that these types of initiatives, you know, we have New York Vendors First. We're buying 90% of our goods and services from New York vendors. We've made commitments to have a showcase in the casino for all local artisans, cheeses, wines. We really want this to be a showcase for the area, not just a one-stop shop casino, which, you know, is the more traditional model when you talk about an Indian casino. So, you know, we are definitely opportunistic, or very excited for this opportunity, and we believe this could be transformative for the Finger Lakes.
James, before I let you go, then, I'm curious to know if what you just described is what helped push your proposal over the top in the eyes of the state. I mean, as you know, there were many competitors for these four essential openings from the state for new casino contracts. And when you made that proposal to the state, did you sense that you had to make a pitch that said it's not just about whatever square footage we have on our footprint, that we are cognizant of the people around us, that we're going to help the community around us because the history hasn't been good? I mean, do you think that helped put your project over the top?
I certainly do, Evan. Beyond the fact that we were over twice to three times the size of our competitors, we are having a lot of community initiatives that we're hoping will really work out for the community. And that seems to be what's pushing us above. You know, those I just mentioned three. There's a ton more that we're going through. And, I believe that's a big part of what these regional destination resort casinos are about, is that you have to be fully integrated into the community. You need the buy-in. You need them to be a part of the process, or else these won't be successful. Like you said, there is competition in the market, and we need the help of the community to do it. I definitely believe this has been part of what pushed us over the edge.
Last question. Whenever this comes up, people ask us about problem gambling. They're concerned about it. I know you're aware of it. Your thoughts about how you're going to address it at Lago?
Sure. This is another aspect in which we were a little bit different than our competitors. We're going to have an on-site problem gambling resource center. We've worked with multiple agencies as well as the New York Council on Problem Gambling. Exactly how we're going to identify help. We have a commitment with the Seneca County Mental Health. Anybody that has insurance, does not have an insurance, if they have an issue, they can get free treatment on us. And obviously we're going to have an extensive training program that will be headed up by the New York Council on Problem Gambling. So, you know, this is definitely a real issue. We have not shied away from it. And unlike our competitors, which is probably another reason why New York State picked us, we've been very upfront about it and wanting that, you know, people can actually have a gaming experience, have it be the entertainment it's meant to be instead of an issue. It's something we're dealing with. And on a personal note, Evan, I just wanted to thank you. I've worked the phone-a-thon the last few years at the Wilmot Cancer Center, and you've always been there and been great. So thank you for that.
Oh, well, look, I'm happy to be there, and I'm always happy at least that I know you and your family, James, have been willing to come on and talk about these issues. And let me at least say this going forward, this is a huge project for this area. I look forward to having you back and other people involved in the project, because I know our listeners will have questions going forward. And we appreciate at the very least that you come on and you answer them every time. So thanks for taking the time.
Of course. Thank you, Evan.
That's James Wilmot, who is one of the principals in the project. And a big, big day for Wilmorite, for the Lago Plans, one of four casino projects awarded essentially thumbs up from the state. So if you've been following that project all along, there have been plenty of people who have strongly supported it and plenty of people who have opposed it. But we will continue to follow it for you on this program in the days and months to come. We're going to take a 60-second break, and when we come back, we're going to welcome a guest who is going to talk to us about the other huge news in the state. What a big news week for New York State. A lot of news in one day. We're talking hydrofracking. The state says no. What's next, and what does that mean for our energy future? Your questions answered when we come back right here on member-supported public radio. Coming up in our second hour, we're in the middle of the Christmas season, but is it really Saturnalia season? You see, the Romans in ancient times celebrated a holiday right near the time we celebrate Christmas. They decorated, exchanged gifts, had big holiday parties. What have we co-opted from that ancient holiday? And are we really celebrating Saturnalia? We'll have some fun with antiquity next hour on Connections.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Heart Hearing Centers, providing hearing care for adults and children for more than 40 years. Audiology services include hearing and tinnitus evaluations, rehabilitation, and devices to accommodate lifestyle needs. Details at harthearing.com.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's have a conversation about fracking and New York's energy future. Huge day yesterday for fracking in New York State. A lot of people, including the majority leader of the New York State Assembly, have been telling us on this program for the past year that they expected that Governor Cuomo would wait until after the election and then use the home rule situation to say that fracking would be allowed wherever communities wanted it, but if they didn't, they could say no. Well, the governor did not do that. The governor came out unequivocally and said, right now, not good enough. In fact, he deferred really to the experts, as he said, but his administration said no to fracking. I want to bring in Suzanne Hunt, who is the president of Hunt Green LLC. That is, Hunt Green LLC works in environmental policy. They work with policymakers. They work with businesses. They work with all kinds of people in technology and other arenas. And Suzanne's family owns Hunt Country Vineyards in Branchport near Cuca Lake. So she grew up in this area. Suzanne, I have no idea where you are. You're in Manhattan or Washington or maybe out of the country. Where are you right now?
Hi, Evan. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm actually in Manhattan right now. I just happened to be here to run a roundtable discussion with experts from Germany where they're transitioning off of fossil fuels, and they also have a moratorium on fracking with New York State energy officials the day before the announcement, and I ended up staying so that I could meet with a bunch of clean tech investment fund managers and others who are all on fire after the big announcement.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you know, given this, I guess, given the fact that you were around so many people in this area yesterday, when that announcement came, I can't imagine it's what people expected.
You know, it was fascinating. Everyone was in shock, really. I mean, usually when something this big is coming out, you know that it's coming. And so this really, everyone's scratching their heads and looking around and saying, you know, we didn't know. Did you know? No, we didn't know. So it's big news. But I think, you know, Cuomo was quoted as saying, you know, he met a whole bunch of people who didn't want fracking. He never actually met anyone who said they wanted it. He met a lot of people who said it was the only alternative. And, you know, he's got an amazing team of energy people. They're doing amazing, really potentially historic work on renewables right now and smart grid. And they realize that there are alternatives, and they make a lot more sense over the long term for New York State.
Talking to Suzanne Hunt, the president of Hunt Green LLC, about the fracking decision. We'd love to hear from our listeners. What do you think about New York State's decision to say no to fracking? And what are your questions about maybe fracking in our energy future outside of gas? You can call the program toll-free right now, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can tweet at the program, at Evan Dawson. And we hope to be hearing later this hour from some landowners who told us that they were pro-fracking, and we're going to try to get some reaction now from people who wanted to see fracking. And the question now is, what are their expectations going forward? But Suzanne, you bring up an interesting and important point, which is that for the argument that said it's the only economic alternative, the governor was very firm about not buying that yesterday. And what do you say to people, Suzanne, who don't really see a lot of all the other alternatives and don't understand what other ideas might be out there?
I think that right now we need to put a lot of effort into education, information sharing about all of the other opportunities that exist right now. And I think that a lot of folks agree, and there's going to be a big push to share information about just all of these different opportunities, about the different things that the state is doing and can expand on, and the new technologies. But just to list a few things, SolarCity is one of the biggest solar companies in the country. They're going to be building a huge manufacturing facility in Buffalo that's going to produce a whole lot of jobs. NYSERDA is funding a $40 million smart grid competition. You know, we're in this incredible moment right now where we're going to change from an electricity system that for the last, you know, ever since it was invented in New York State, has basically been based around huge generation facilities that produce energy and electricity when it comes to your home. And now we're transitioning to distributed electricity generated from the sun, from the wind, from biomass. There's geothermal heating and cooling and all of these, this whole array of different resources that we have in the state that we're now, anyone can become a producer. The cost of solar and wind has gone down 5 times in the last 6 years. So not even, you know, by half, by 5 times. New York State has created a green bank. We're one of the few states that has a green bank. Right now, they're starting off with $1 billion. They just announced the first $200 million in financing. They've offered to do webinars so we can do follow-on programs to share information about what's happening there. There's just so much going on in New York, and I think that there just hasn't been enough education about it. There hasn't been enough information sharing, and so I think we can do a lot with that.
I want to listen to a couple of comments yesterday from that announcement from the Cuomo administration. The first comes from the acting health commissioner, Howard Zucker, and he was talking about the overall review and some of his own questions that eventually did play into the state's decision. Even Governor Cuomo referenced that. Let's listen to acting health commissioner Howard Zucker first.
And until the public health red flags are answered by valid evidence through longitudinal long-term studies, prospective analysis, patient surveys with large population pools showing that the risk for impact on public health are avoidable or sufficiently low, I cannot support high-volume hydraulic fracturing in the great state of New York.
Now let's listen to Governor Andrew Cuomo, who I think was trying to diffuse some of the strong reaction on all sides of this. This is Governor Cuomo yesterday.
I'm a lawyer. I'm not a doctor. I'm not an environmentalist. I'm not a scientist. So let's bring the emotion down and let's ask the qualified experts what their opinion is.
Suzanne Hunt, a couple of things here. First of all, did it bother you when the governor said he's not an environmentalist? Did it bother you and your colleagues?
I don't worry about those kinds of things. I mean, he's balancing a lot of different pressures, and I think,
yep,
you know, one of the amazing things about this fracking battle in New York versus looking at other issues versus looking nationwide, it wasn't professional environmentalists that fought this fight. It was just regular New Yorkers and of across the political spectrum who came together in their towns, in their cities, in their communities, and started banning fracking. They started studying the risks to their health, to their children's health, to the existing industries like the wine industry, like our growing sustainable agriculture industry in New York. And they said this risk is not worth taking. And it was regular people that did this. It's really an incredible moment for New York, and it's an amazing pivot point for the people who, you know, have dedicated their lives and have been studying environmental issues. Now is a moment where we can finally stop putting so much time and energy into fighting fracking, and we can focus all of that time and energy on the transition to much more efficient homes and businesses and renewable energy generation.
The governor said that he wanted to trust the qualified experts. And the implication, Suzanne, is that the roughly 30 states that do allow horizontal hydraulic fracturing in some way are getting it wrong. And what I was wondering is, if this decision by New York State is going to have an impact outside of New York State. Now, you and your work takes you across the country and sometimes around the world. And I'm curious to know if you have heard from people that this is more than just a New York State decision in any way.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, I've been getting emails and phone calls from people all over the world saying, you know, just they're so excited because this is going to help them in their work. I just took a delegation of New York State energy specialists to Germany 2 weeks ago to meet with experts and businessmen and politicians there. And Germany is a bigger economy than New York. It's the fourth largest industrial economy in the world. You know, lots of heavy manufacturing, chemicals, automotive, and they have a national policy to transition off of fossil fuels and nuclear by 2050. They're already at 30% renewable electricity on their grid, and so they're already doing this, and they're thrilled to have a peer on the international stage. And so this decision has absolutely put New York State on the international stage.
I'd love to hear from our listeners in this, and we're getting some comments online on Twitter. We're going to get to those in a minute, and you can call the program now, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Howard writes to the program and says, "We will not be able to do anything with enough time to make up for the lost opportunity of not fracking." And I hear that a lot, Suzanne, so let's hit this idea that if you are against fracking, you are anti-economy, that you are willing to injure our economy. You've been making the case that's not right, that there are even scalable alternatives. Let's talk more specifically about what's coming and when. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you have a transition like this, there are people that want to stick with the old systems. I'm sure the horse and buggy industry fought like crazy when the automotive industry was getting started. But we are in a historic transition away from digging fossil fuels out of the ground and burning them to producing energy directly or indirectly from the sun, whether it's wind, solar, biomass. And so, of course, you know, there's going to be resistance. There always is. But you know, if you look at the cost of producing energy from the sun, from the wind, it's now competitive with fossil fuel prices, and the risks are much lower. The risks to health, the risks of environmental contamination. And so when I'm meeting with this morning, I just had breakfast with one of the principals at a $2 billion merchant bank, and they are investing heavily in renewables because it's long-term, very low risk, very good returns. We now know we know exactly how much it costs to produce and install solar and to produce and install wind, and we can predict. There's incredibly complex weather modeling that's being done. You can predict the output. There's incredible innovation happening on the grid demand side management, where you can move energy around and control demand in different ways so you can balance the grid without having to bring on really expensive natural gas and other fossil fuel generation. Now, you can say, well, gas is cheap right now, but we actually have an electricity system where we have far, far, far more electricity generation capacity in New York State than we need, because we have to spend huge amounts of money to have these extra natural gas and coal and other plants up and running for a few hours a year or a few days a year when we have peak demand. And so when you actually use renewables and smart grid and backup storage as a way to balance out those peaks, you bring the cost of the electricity system down, actually.
Suzanne, you mentioned that the governor is under political pressure. Anytime you've got to make a decision on something like this, with this level, you're going to upset some people. There's going to be pressure, et cetera. So I'm curious to know, when you meet with policymakers, et cetera. Again, you talked about meeting with a $2 billion company today. When you meet with people who make policy, are they educated enough? I mean, are they understanding? Do they have to think outside the old paradigm, the old energy grid that we've been living with for decades now? And is it difficult for policymakers to think in that way, or is that starting to change?
You know, it's interesting. I've been working in Washington for 12 years now, and at that level and with that level of pressure coming from the existing incumbent business as usual industries, it's really, really, really hard to do something big and bold. But with New York State, we actually have a bunch of policymakers who've been they've heard the people. The New York State citizens have spoken and spoken loudly. I mean, I think that all of the citizen action and the grassroots mobilization has really put these issues like front and center for our political leaders. But they've also hired really, really good people. We have Richard Kaufman at the Green Bank. They've got incredible staff at NYSERDA. And these are folks that know the potential of the renewable energy for renewable energy production in New York, and they know that to get the policies right, we need to get the policies right to help the transition happen faster and also in an equitable way, right? So if we want to talk about jobs and economic development, it can't just be a few big companies that are reaping the benefits. New York State right now, it's amazing. I talked to folks across New York State, and a lot of them haven't heard of this yet, so I'm hoping we can start doing a bunch of webinars and things. New York State is running a process called Reforming the Energy Vision, where they're reforming how they regulate the electricity utilities in order to help facilitate this transition from large centralized energy generation to distributed renewables and smart grid. And it's potentially a game changer. It's potentially going to make New York a model for the country.
We're talking to Suzanne Hunt, who is the president of Hunt Green LLC, and her work focuses on policy, technology, business development, and environmental with renewables. And we're going to get to the phones in a minute because, Suzanne, you have lit up the phones, and we're going to get through. So if you're waiting on the phone, we're coming to you next. But the host's last question for Suzanne is this, because our audience may know of Hunt Country Vineyards down in Branchport near Keuka Lake, and that's Suzanne's family. They might see the name Art and Joyce Hunt, and a lot of the people in your family, Suzanne, have been very active on these issues, etc. What are you hearing from your family, especially in the wine industry, that has viewed this issue as a very, very important one?
Oh, it's too bad this is radio and not TV. I have a gigantic smile on my face. This has been such a huge effort for our family and for the industry, and everyone is so relieved. We first got wind of the fracking issue many years ago when there was potentially going to be an injection well a few miles from our winery and close to Dr. Frank in Keuka Lake, and 50 tanker trucks a day of toxic flowback fluids from Pennsylvania were going to be coming up, and they were going to inject them in the ground. And that really woke people up. We said, and they were able to, block that and really start getting educated and involved. And we had already put up a small vertical axis wind turbine. We've put in a geothermal heating and cooling system with support from NYSERDA, and we're going to be putting solar in this spring. And I'm working with some amazing companies, and I'm really excited to work with other wineries. I think my ultimate dream would be for New York State's for everyone drinking New York State wine to be drinking carbon neutral New York State wine. So I think, and the wine industry is incredibly supportive. The Finger Lakes wineries have just created a Finger Lakes wine business coalition to try and help facilitate and put their support behind this sustainable development path for upstate. So it couldn't be a better Christmas present for everybody.
Let's get to the phones. This is Greg and Henrietta. Greg, you're on with Suzanne Hunt. Go ahead.
Hello, Evan. Hello, Suzanne. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm one of those guys that has worked in central Pennsylvania in the Montrose area, also as far down south as Pittsburgh. I'm one of the guys that runs the heavy, heavy equipment that prepares the earth and the site, cuts the shelves and everything so that the companies like Cabot and Williams can come in with their derrick and start hydrofracking. And here's what I observed while I was working in Pennsylvania. There's not enough roads to support the truck traffic, which they call sand cans, which are 18-wheelers that are filled with the sand that they inject with the other stuff. And then there's also water cans, which destroy the roads, but once they destroy the roads, then Cabot and Williams are big enough and financially able to pay off, help build the new roads, etc. I think that downstate New York has the road infrastructure, but I know that people are against it. I also observed while I was down there that top of ground, anything that happens above ground with us building the sites is strictly enforced. One drop of hydraulic fluid, we have to stop, and we have to go through all this rigmarole. But who knows what happens below ground once they start hydrofracking? It provides a lot of temporary jobs, and then the pipeliners move on once it's done to move on to another state and do it again. That's the way it works down there.
Suzanne, what do you think?
Yeah, you raise a whole lot of really important points. I mean, destroying the roads is something, and the truck traffic is one of the things that the Finger Lakes tourism industry is really concerned about. I mean, who wants to come stay in a bed and breakfast and go to a lake where they're stuck in traffic and the roads are a wreck. You know, a lot of the focus of folks supporting fracking are supporting it based on these jobs arguments. But as the caller pointed out, these are just temporary jobs that can do long-term permanent damage to the existing industries. The wine industry alone in the Finger Lakes creates billions of dollars in economics.
If I might interject, too, here's what happens with the landowners, too. Once they sell the mineral rights, they're instant rich. Then they rent out their home or their farm, and then they leave the state. That's what happens. I'm running out of minutes on my phone. Thanks for taking the call.
Greg, thanks for the call. I don't know that that's true for everybody, and I will say that we've been expecting to hear, and we still hope to hear from, in the last 24 hours, I've been trying to be in touch with people from a lot of sides of the issue on the fracking decision and tried to get in touch with some landowners who had supported it and still waiting for one of their calls. So we hope that that comes in, because I don't know if they'll paint the exact same picture. But, Suzanne, I think what Greg is saying is that people who make money on it often make money and don't stick around and don't have to deal with it. Is that far-flung, or is that fair?
I mean, there's any number of problems that are being experienced in these communities. I think, you know, the key thing for me is that this is all really short-term with fracking. You know, I think the fracking is being sold to states based on the assumption that you're going to drill those wells and that they're going to produce for 30 years like a conventional gas well. But with shale gas, the production drops off rapidly. So it really is a short-term play. And, you know, we're the seventh generation of Hunts on our farm. We take a multi-generational long-term view. And, you know, for upstate New York for there to be good jobs and long-term economic development, to bring in a heavy industry with thousands of trucks and toxic chemicals and, you know, and build out this massive industrial extraction industry that's not going to last very long, it just doesn't make any sense.
Back to the phones. This is Thomas in Greece. Go ahead, Thomas.
Yes. Hello. I read in the Democrat and Chronicle today that only horizontal fracking will be banned, but vertical fracking can go on. And I was wondering why vertical fracking should be allowed, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Thomas, thanks for the call. Suzanne?
I'm probably not the best person to comment on that. What I would say is that it's probably not going to be economically viable to just do small vertical wells. I would reach out to specialists on that issue to get you a proper answer.
And I think, Suzanne, I will weigh in and say that as a journalist who's tried to cover this issue for a number of years now, one of the things we've heard often from the industry is, hey, this has been going on for decades upon decades. It's not new. And I always thought that was a little bit like comparing a horse and buggy to an automobile, and as you made that comparison, that vertical fracking versus high pressure horizontal fracking is are not necessarily the same thing, and bring a different set of circumstances. And you know, do you view it the same way?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's also a scale issue.
Right.
But I think, I mean, the story today is that we, I mean, is that in gas prices, you know, the story for me is, and the thing that's amazing to me that isn't being shouted from mountaintops is that we have clean energy generation technologies today, sun, wind, that are cost competitive with fossil fuel generation. So we don't even have to get into, you know, is it okay to frack vertically versus, we don't have to frack. We don't have to deal with any of that disruption or risk because we have these clean technologies that are cost competitive today. We know how to finance them. The finance community wants to finance them. They provide long-term stable returns on those investments. And, you know, once the upfront costs are financed, your energy is free. The sun is free. The wind is free. So you know what your long-term costs are. It's a little bit of maintenance and zero.
Before I jump back to the phones here, to follow up on the point of the question of vertical versus horizontal or what to do with the gas now that New York State is not going to be fracking, I think it's important to point out that the acting health commissioner, Howard Zucker, yesterday indicated that there is still not enough study, and he stressed longitudinal study. For those who have been complaining that New York State is just delaying what they already know, Zucker is saying we need years, we need maybe decades to see, and if other states are going to do this, then New York State can still study it. And here's Jake writing to us saying, quote, to those who think we missed the boat on gas, think of it this way. We know it's there. If renewables don't pan out, it will still be there, in the ground. Given current oil prices, it will invariably be worth more later and safer to extract later as technology advances, if it's needed at all. It's far more valuable in the ground than out right now. Suzanne, I doubt you hope that we'll eventually amend this decision that New York State made yesterday, but at the same time, I think that point is not incorrect, that gas has not gone away, that there will always be energy companies that would like to access it, and that if for some reason all of this menu of other options don't pan out, that it's still there. Is that fair?
We have the top scientists in the nation and the world saying that we need to leave the vast majority of the fossil fuels in the ground if we're going to have a stable climate system for the generations to come.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually puts the impetus on all of us to really do everything we can now that we've won the fracking fight in New York for now. Now the impetus is on us to build out the renewable energy economy and support. You know, I was just talking with some of the governor's energy staff this morning, and they're saying, you know, everybody's thrilled. We're so excited, but we need the public support for this transition to smarter grid and to distributed renewables. And hopefully we won't have to come back to this issue again in the future, because we're going to build out the renewables economy. And I mean, if they don't pan out, I mean, it's a funny statement, because, you know, we can decide what kind of future we want. And if we want clean air and low risk energy generation versus risky disruptive, that's what we should work on. And other countries, Portugal's at 50% sun and wind right now. Denmark is a high portion wind. So it's happening in a lot of places. And one of the benefits of being a leader is that New York can become, you know, there's a lot more jobs actually in renewables than in fossil. It takes a lot less people to dig a hole in the ground and extract things than it does to go out and engineer and design new technologies, to sell them, to do the marketing. There's just jobs all the way up and down the value chains. And so New York can actually become a technology leader and be exporting our technologies to other places. So there's a huge benefit to being a leader. And Germany has proved that. And one of the things that they've said that they've actually, one of the things they've done wrong is they completely underestimated the speed of innovation. And so they set this really strong policy framework to say, we are going to get off of fossil fuels. And they had to make it really strong in order to be a pioneer. But then it wasn't flexible enough to reduce the payments for sun and wind, because the cost, the innovation happened so fast, so much faster than they expected, that the cost dropped so fast that they really had to scramble to keep up.
All right, Suzanne, let me jump in on that point and say, first of all, every phone line is now filled, and we've got to fly through some phone calls. But on that point, real quickly, Andy called in to ask, renewable energy compares to fossil fuels in cost, then why do renewables have to be subsidized? What's a short answer for Andy, Suzanne?
Well, you know, they don't necessarily have to be subsidized. In some places they aren't. I mean, but right now the fossil fuels are subsidized. And right now the fossil fuel industry has, you know, a huge amount of political and policy support around it. So in some places they do need equal government support. In some places they don't need government support. We're gonna put solar up. There's a whole lot of ways where you don't need government subsidies.
To the phones, and try to be brief, callers, because we got a lot to get through. Pete, Rochester. Go ahead, Pete.
Good afternoon. To Andy's question, we don't calculate the cost of the externalities that the oil, gas, and coal industry heap upon us, the taxpayers. One, protecting the shipping lanes, for example, the cost of our military to protect the shipping lanes. And number two, healthcare costs. The cost that is inflicted on the average individual in the way of the their diminished health capacity, and the cost that we pay, that the oil company, oil, gas, and coal companies do not pay. Second, I'm glad to hear that the guest is not stopping here and wants to continue and advance the transition. And I'd like to know if she's familiar with Mark Jacobson, who co-authored a study out of Stanford University, how to power the world without fossil fuels and accomplish it by 2030. He also studied New York State, came to the same conclusion, completely renewable by 2030. And in addition to the article that was printed in April of 2013, Scientific American, he also states that the governor, Andrew Cuomo, is aware of the study. We know this is something that is possible. It could be accomplished in a short period of time. We could create who knows how many jobs in the innovation, the production, and the installation of the equipment.
All right, Pete, I've got to let Suzanne jump in. Thank you for the call, Pete. Suzanne, are you aware of the Mark Jacobson study?
Absolutely. And I think it would be absolutely incredible. The next step for New York State is a target like that. What, 100% by 2050, 80% by, you know, 50% by 2020, a target like that is exactly what we need.
Mark Jacobson study, you can Google it online, find out more about that. Joseph is in Burdett. Go ahead, Joseph.
Yeah. Hi, Evan. Hi, Suzanne. This is Joseph Campbell. And I just wanted to say that we're ecstatic over here with Governor Cuomo's decision, but I want to remind everybody that there's still a gas storage issue on Seneca Lake. Thanks for bringing up the injection well issue, Suzanne. I still own property in Pulteney. I was involved in that fight. I moved over to Seneca Lake and found myself embroiled in a fight against fracked gas and fracked gas derivative storage right across the lake from where I live now. And that fight is still ongoing. We can ban fracking in New York forever. But we could be storing fracked gas from Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia, places like that. So thanks for having me on, Evan.
Yeah, Joseph, thank you. Suzanne?
Yeah, I agree. Until we, you know, and until we keep pushing off of fossil fuels, they're never going to go away permanently. And a couple of the callers have brought that up.
Bud and Chile. Go ahead, Bud.
Hi. I imagine you're aware of it, but they keep referring to this as hydrofracking, but there is another technology which does not use water. It uses propane. It does not inject any chemicals into the ground. Propane is a natural constituent of natural gas. So if you are able to get natural gas, you will also get propane back. And the advantage of that is it offers a bridge to the future of electric cars, in that propane is a relatively easy fuel to distribute and use in cars, even with minor conversion of modern-day internal combustion engines.
All right, Bud, I've got to let Suzanne jump in. Go ahead, Suzanne. I've got about 30 seconds, so go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think for the most part, the auto industry for personal passenger vehicles is going towards electrification, and battery cars full of batteries are a perfect, are perfectly synergistic with renewable energy because they can become part of the grid storage. Most cars aren't used more than an hour a day, so the rest of the time they're sitting there, they can be plugged in, and they can be helping to store some of the energy from the sun and the wind.
My guest for the hour has been a Finger Lakes native, Suzanne Hunt, the president of Hunt Green LLC, whose family owns Hunt Country Vineyards on Keuka Lake. Suzanne, it's great to talk to you. Where would you send people who want to follow what's going on with some frequency and to sort of stay current on renewable energy? What's a good resource for the lay people to follow?
There's so many.
You only have 10 seconds, so you better tell us one of them.
They can go to the New York State NYSERDA's website. They can go to my website.
Which is what?
HuntGreenLLC.com. And I'll try and get some more information about this up.
We'll talk to you again soon. Thank you for taking the time, Suzanne.
All right. Thanks, Evan.
Suzanne Hunt from Hunt Green LLC. Short break and more with you next, right here on Member Supported Public Radio.